Welcome to The Message, the weekly Hamilton Spectator podcast. I'm John Wells, and I'm joined, as always, by producer Aisha Nasser. This episode is titled, She's the Mayor, Marianne Mead Ward Takes Charge in Burlington. Marianne was recently elected in the municipal election, defeating incumbent Rick Goldring, and she'll be sworn in Monday as Burlington's first female mayor in four decades. For the record, Hamilton has never elected a female mayor, although the same is not true of its former independent municipalities, Dundas, Stony Creek, Glanbrook, Ancaster, Flamborough, who all have had women in the mayor's chair in the past. Aisha, you know, in preparing for the interview, I came across a story that ran in The Spectator 8 years ago when Marianne Mead Ward first won a seat on council. She had and has a reputation for tenacity in the political arena. The story back then focused on her victory and that of a female colleague who had once been Miss Canada by calling the newbie councillors, quote, beauty and the beast, and continued with, quote, Burlington elects a former Miss Canada and a political pit bull.
I have so many questions about that.
I thought you'd find that interesting. It's, I mean, it was only 8 years ago, in a sense, but that's, I know, it's kind of hard to believe. I think some might call that offensive. I don't think we'd run that headline today, you know.
I think our rep James especially would pick that up.
I would think so. So you know what? I'm going to ask Marianne about that old headline, and also about the full contact election campaign she just won, and maybe about the afterlife, and not just life after politics. Welcome to Marianne Mead Ward, and that will be Mayor Mead Ward on Monday, December 3rd, when you're sworn in, correct?
Actually, I take the title on December 1st. We're not inaugurated until December 3rd, so I've been told that if there's an emergency in Burlington in those days, in between, they may have to wake me up in the middle of the night and swear me in on the spot so I can deal with it. So we're just hoping it's smooth for many days, not just those two. But I do actually take office on December 1st.
Right. I was thinking that you and I have not met face-to-face. We spoke on the phone a couple times for for stories, including one about the Burlington Pier.
Yes.
that in its day was a controversial project and when you sat in council. And I was going to say, you know, I love the pier. I love walking in summertime. Is everyone on board with that now, by the way, or are there still some people that it sticks in their craw?
Well, I think people are generous. Burlington residents are generous, and when they recognize that something has happened and it's done, they move on, right? Yeah. I do know a lot of people who love the pier. I do know people, if you were to ask them, who would say, meh, you know, it's a neat thing, but we spent a lot of money, and our park is pretty spectacular, our waterfront park. But most people have now embraced it. They use it. We light it up, with meaningful colors throughout the year for charities, for special events, for causes. So that adds something back to the community. And it was a difficult process. I don't think the right decision was made in the end. Cost us a whole lot more money than it should have if we had just worked with the contractor rather than going to war with the contractor. And certainly that was borne out at the end of the day by the settlement that happened, and the contractor got a settlement. We got a settlement from the engineer. But it is what it is, right? It's there now, and I think it's one of those things that I really hope becomes a case study in what not to do on a whole bunch of different levels. Because there are lessons to be learned there, and I don't know if municipal governments, including ours, have learned those lessons.
Mm-hmm. We were saying before the show the swearing-in ceremony on Monday is it's a free public event. You said that it's sold out.
It is, yeah.
700 people?
It seats 718, and it's a free event. We asked people to take tickets so that we would know, because we're having a reception with it. It's entertainment. It's a very special kind of a council meeting, they were gone. Only a few left within hours, and as of today, I've been told there are none left. So what we're actually working on, what we're trying to do, is open up a studio space to see if we can broadcast it to folks and have some overflow area. Certainly anyone can come to the reception pre and post, and there will be food from our local folks and some entertainment. So even if people don't have a ticket, I'd invite them to come.
In terms of your family, who may be there, you've been married 25 years to Peter.
Yes.
And you have your three children, to your daughters in university. Will any of them be able to attend? Or
they're all going to be there.
Oh, nice.
There. My daughters are coming back just for the day to attend. My son and my husband, of course, will be there as mm-hmm. well. And, you know, I wouldn't be here without my husband. He's my biggest supporter, my biggest fan. And none of us do this without the support of our family, because your new family is the community, and it is a big sacrifice for everybody that we willingly make to serve the community.
Are you prepared, for how you'll feel when you take that oath? Are you the type to get misty watching a movie or dropping one of his up at university?
Oh, I cry like a baby at movies. Yeah, I expect I will feel a number of things. And, you know, and that started a little bit already. As soon as you're elected, people treat you like the mayor. I'm technically the mayor-elect right now. But really, they expect you to start serving. And of course, I have started serving the community. So you get a bit of a ramp up to it. But it is, it's an incredible honor. You know, it's an incredible thing. And sometimes I wake up in the morning and pinch myself and think, wow, I'm the mayor. I have this incredible responsibility, this incredible honor of service, and can't wait to get started, and in fact already have.
And it's been an interesting road to power for you.
That's one word for it.
I led the podcast reading to Aisha an old spec headline, but not that old, 8 years old, mm-hmm. that said, Beauty and the Beast, Burlington elects a former Miss Canada, which was a colleague on council, and a political pit bull, which was you.
Mm-hmm.
And which was no doubt, I'm trying to be as fair as I can, you know, to draw attention to the story and to your intensity as a politician, I suppose, or something, to be charitable. But how did you react to that then? How do you react to it looking back on it now, that sort of thing?
My feelings today are the same as they were then. It's an appalling headline. It was kind of an insult to both of us. You know, my colleague who was elected at the time, the Blair Lancaster, who had run and won Miss Canada, she was far more than a beauty queen, didn't deserve to be dismissed on the basis of beauty and looks. She is a businesswoman, was a community supporter, so she deserved better than that. And, you know, the dog reference to a woman is incredibly offensive, and in a sense it was telling all women everywhere, if you have an opinion about something and you dare to speak it out loud, you know, get ready for the labels.
Mm-hmm.
Get
yeah.
ready to be called aggressive, get ready to be called a pit bull. And so it was a really offensive headline. In fact, when I go into classrooms or I talk to young women about politics, and I get requests a lot to mentor and to talk to people. I have co-op students coming into my office. I do the Take Our Kids to Work Day, and I talk to them about that headline. That you know, if we think that things are all fine and women don't have to worry about sexist behavior towards them, we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong, and we saw a different iteration of that this election. But you know. My family and my friends are ones to make lemon out of lemonade and see the silver lining. And so my sister-in-law actually bought me a calendar of puppy pit bulls. And so for the first year in office, so we kind of owned the title in a different way. We tried to make it a positive word.
Yeah.
So that became the joke around the household, is that, you know, all these really cute little puppy pit bulls, and we'd see what the next month would bring. And so we kind of embraced it in that way and made it something better than the intent was.
Right, yeah. I mean, I was trying to think of a politician, you know, someone like the late John McCain. You know, no one is a real fighter and all this sort of thing, but
mm-hmm.
you know, no one would ever look upon that as a negative or call him a name. But I guess it's just sexist.
It's very sexist. Women are not supposed to fight for what they believe in, and why not? I mean, throughout history, since the dawn of time, women have fought for what they believed in. They fought for their family, they fought for themselves, they fought for their children, for their communities, alongside men. And so why do we still have these different labels applied one that's much more positive to men and much more negative to women.
Right. I mentioned McCain, which is my segue into the United States, which is where you were born.
Yes.
born in Colorado. So you were Marianne Mead,
I guess,
right?
Yeah.
Was Marianne someone you were named after? Or
My mom's name is Marion, and the spelling of my name and my mom's name is unique. Usually Marion is often with an O, but hers was M-A-R-I-A-N, so they added the extra N-E at the end, and my mom really loved it because it's the French spelling, so... Yeah. I get lots of people singing French songs to me, and with the word Marianne or Leonard Cohen songs, which are awesome. But yeah, she decided she wanted something a little different, and named all her kids with a version of Anne in their name. So it's Suzanne is my oldest. I'm the middle child. Deanne and Jonathan. So that was kind of her thinking there.
Interesting. Now, you came north to Canada. You grew up mostly in Ottawa?
I spent some... So we landed in Toronto just before I entered kindergarten, and then fairly quickly moved to Kingston. I was there until grade 9, and then high school in Ottawa, high school and university in Ottawa.
Right.
And then first job in Toronto, and then off to Burlington after that.
Carleton, which I attended as well.
Yeah.
So just curious, your father, what brought the family up to Canada? What was the deal there?
Well, he's the Canadian. So he was studying at the University of Minnesota where my mom was studying. So he fell in love with an American girl, as they say.
Yeah.
But when they were raising their family, they decided to raise us in Canada. They liked the culture, they liked the education system, the healthcare system. My mom was really interested in traveling, and so they moved us to Canada. So I've grown up my whole life essentially in Ontario. My whole family, my siblings, all moved to the U.S. They met and married, went to post-secondary in the U.S., met and married their future and current spouses, and I happened to fall in love with a Canadian guy. So I'm the only one here, and fell in love with the country. I absolutely love Canada.
So I guess my other American question, because why not, I suppose, and because now that you said most of your family lives in the States,
yes.
What do you think of, what do your relatives think of Donald Trump? His supporters down there certainly admire his tenacity.
Yes. What do you think? Well, I'd like Donald Trump to stay away from Twitter when he's in a bullying mindset. I think his behavior in that regard has lowered the dialogue, has allowed people to do a lot of bullying on social media, and certainly some of the things that happened during our political campaign here in Burlington during the mayor's election that was almost all focused on me, people made those comparisons that this is in an era of Trump, people lose civility, they lose the ability to talk about issues, they just attack people. So certainly very critical of that. He's stood up for people on trade. So I know there's a reason why he's elected and why people voted for him. I'm a Democrat, but my family's Republican, so we have interesting debates about these things.
Just the American Thanksgiving is quite too busy.
I don't see them all that often, but we're in touch in other ways, so we follow each other. But I know some of my nephews and nieces went to Trump rallies. And
yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
You mentioned the bullying on social media and that sort of thing. I wanted to ask if you felt, you were subject to negative campaigning in the mayor's race. Do you think we're in an age where the sort of the anger and incivility out there has increased, or social media simply unmasking a part of humanity that was already there?
I think what it's done is allowed a much larger megaphone for what's there. And so something can spread very quickly to thousands of people. So the damage is much worse. You know, if you and I are talking about something, you know, maybe we know five people and they know five people and it stops there. When you're on social media with thousands of followers and they each have thousands of followers and so on and so on, a negative comment, a rumor, and that behavior can spread like wildfire and take over a conversation. And that's really what we saw in Burlington, there was an attempt to do that. People were flooded on social media with sponsored ads on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, attacking me. But the great thing in Burlington was there was a tremendous backlash. People saw it for what it was and said, not in our town. And in fact, the backlash was so significant that we know we had people coming to our campaign to check us out to say, if somebody's trying this hard to discredit you, you must be doing something right. So my concern about social is firstly the anonymity of it is still available. You know, you can create fake Facebooks, anonymous Twitters. We saw that being set up in the Burlington campaign. Some of those are still active, and all those people would do is just attack. And so that anonymity decreases civility, and then just the scale of it, the ability to reach thousands of people instantly, and beyond that, tens of thousands of people instantly. So it's going to be a real struggle for any elected official in any community to try to have a civil discourse and remind people that what happens on Twitter and Facebook shouldn't happen at all, shouldn't happen there, but we're not going to let it happen in our town halls, in our council chambers. We're going to respect each other, disagree with each other. And that was actually a central part of my platform, mm-hmm. is civility and respect among council members, to the community, to our staff. We can disagree, but we should not be disagreeable.
Mm-hmm. You were in the paper recently, the Spectator's Rosie Ann Grover did a Q&A with you, which Aisha's going to post the link to that, mm-hmm. Q&A on the podcast here. And you said it felt, you know, surreal.
Yes.
To know you're about to take the helm as a mayor. I mean, you have a lot of experience in council and an accomplished person, but do you feel any fear going into this? I think that'd be a human emotion. I'd be scared.
I call it daunting. I'm not afraid. I know what I'm in for, and I know what I signed up for. I think I've always been the underdog, and you know, I've run against incumbents every race I've ever run in. I was defeated twice. I won twice. I was an incumbent once, so I didn't unseat myself. But you know, I was always the underdog, not expected to win, not expected to, you know, to achieve. And this is completely reversed now. I have people stopping me on the street of all ages. I had young people stopping me on the street and people saying, "We are so excited. You're going to do great things. We can't wait to see what you're going to do." And so the expectations are enormous. So it's daunting, but it's also it's humbling and it's very encouraging, because we can do great things.
Mm-hmm. Your road to the mayor's chair here, I was, you know, reading up, and you know, in your working life, in the past, you've been a columnist. You were a managing editor at Faith Today magazine.
Yep.
And president of the Canadian Church Press.
I was, yes.
In your interview with The Spec, you talked about how you see your role, quote, in this life as helping people. So that leads me to ask, how would you describe the place of faith in your life over the years and now?
Well, I don't ever get asked that question. Thank you for that. So I grew up in a very devoutly religious family. Baptist fundamentalist, I would say. Mm-hmm. I went to church my whole life, growing up and even as a young adult. And what I learned in the church community, I learned a lot about politics in
yeah,
the church
for sure.
community. There's politics wherever you have humans.
Yeah.
And so that was really an interesting experience. I've been through church splits. I've been through, you know, people you know, breaking relationship with each other over religious issues. I've seen it all, and what I saw in churches is that that soft collaborative leadership was required. You know, a minister can't compel his congregants to do something. You had to persuade. You had to bring people along, and so the best ministers are able to do that and make a case and to bring people along. And the more you can do that, you can do amazing things. And so I learned about all the values of faith, that really the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done to you, care for people who are in need, you know, all of those teachings, which really took a seed in my heart about this is how we should behave, and whether you go into a church field or a corporate world or a nonprofit charitable world, or even in politics, that root of in my own experience in my life, wherever I land, it's about helping people. It's about doing what I can from a position of, if I have power and influence, using that to assist people, to help people. I've always been that way, and I would say that's a direct result of the religious teachings and the experiences that I had growing up. As an adult, my faith journey is a little different. I don't have a regular congregation, but I do go to churches, and I admire the work that so many of our churches in Burlington are doing. They're the front lines of poverty. They're the front lines of community outreach in many cases still, as they always have been. And I love to see that the churches in our community and beyond are doing the mission that they were created for, which is to serve the community, to help people, and to love them the way God, in the teaching, God and Jesus taught us to love them.
Do you pray? You'll get asked either.
Define praying. I do, and I would say that prayer is a lot of different things, and sometimes I use words and sometimes I don't. I contemplate a lot and ask for assistance and introspective in that way. And I think prayer is an expression of what's inside ourselves in terms of our desires. And when we speak that, we help to give life to it. And then we help to, when we give life to those inner desires, we draw people who share that to us. So I believe in miracles, but I believe in people, and people are the heart of miracles. I've seen it, a miracle can be somebody forgiving another person. That's a small miracle. We see those every day and we don't notice them.
In the earthly political life to come for you, you're starting this new adventure, but have you ever allowed yourself to wonder about higher offices than that of mayor, premier, or even higher than that?
I'd have to brush up on my French. People often ask me about that. I am exactly where I need to be, and I expect to be here for as long as the people will have me for a while. I'm not going to be here till 93 like Hazel McCallion. I don't see that kind of thing in my future. And I do actually believe in term limits for political people. So I will decide when my term limit, or the public will decide, obviously, in another way, what my term is. Political parties, you have to get used to the idea of a political party if you go beyond this. And I've always loved the municipal level because there's no political parties. Mm-hmm. It's you, it's your platform, it's your ability to do your homework, research, and persuade your, in our case, three other people, 4 out of 7 votes, to go along with you for what you're trying to achieve for the community. And for me and my temperament, that's exactly where I need to be. I did run for a provincial political party, and that was tough. I remember going to the door and people saying, yelling at me for things I had nothing to do with. I didn't decide. In fact, I agreed with them on some of the issues. So that would be a tough adjustment to get into party politics at a higher level. And I also have to say, when I look at each of the platforms, there are always things in each political party platform that I admire and respect.
Well, Marianne, I wish you luck.
Thank you.
In the days ahead. And
thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show. And hopefully you'll visit us again on The Message.
Anytime.
And my thanks, as always, to Aisha Nasser and to you, the audience. And on that note, if you have a comment or observation you'd like to make about any of our podcasts, email it to me and I may read it on the air. Send it to jwells@thespec.com. I'm John Wells, and we will talk to you next time.